Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and I forgot my name there for a second. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am joined by writing duo, Becca and Krista Ritchie. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Krista and Becca Ritchie are New York Times and USA Today best-selling authors and identical twins, one a science nerd, the other a comic book geek, but with their shared passion for writing, they combine their mental powers as kids and have never stopped telling stories. They love superheroes, flawed characters, and soulmate love. And so before we talk about Destructively Mine, let's get to know you a little bit. So you've been writing pretty much forever then?
Yeah, since we were like little kids. Becca wrote before me though. She started writing like middle school era, would you say?
Yeah, like sixth grade.
Yeah. And I would be reading over her shoulder, just trying to, you know, read everything she wrote. And she was too slow for me. Like I would be like, you need to pick up the pace. Like it got to the point where I had a Game Boy and I'd be like playing a game, like glancing over, reading more. And at a certain point I was like, this is not going to work. So I just started writing my own stories and we kind of switched back and forth, letting each other read them. And they were just like fun stories. We never, in middle school, were like, we're going to be published authors one day. We just really enjoyed writing.
So what made you decide to write that first book and push publish?
Yeah.
Or rather finish that first book, since clearly you've been writing like books essentially forever. But what made you finish that first book and say, I'm going to publish this?
I think in high school, because that's when I completed my first book, and we would go to the bookstore and buy these like huge things on how to get an agent and like query agents and send things in the mail because it wasn't really email based at the time. And we, at that point, I think it was just like a kid's high school dream. It was just like, oh, I'm gonna just shoot my shot. Like, let's see what happens. And Krista always helped me because she like loved the books that I wrote. And Krista, we have a joke that Krista never finished a book. She would, her stories never ended. They were like a million words. They had no conclusion. But it was like, I could do, you know, I tried to like write an actual novel, and we would go to these conventions where you would meet agents, and we both just wanted to get better at writing and like hone in our craft and stuff. And, but we never, it never panned out. We always got rejected. We got good, nice feedback, but always rejected. And in college, we just, we kept doing it. And it wasn't until in college when we started writing together that we were like, well, maybe we have a shot like writing together. We really enjoy it. And we're getting better at writing. We're older. And I think that we still kept getting rejected at that point. But when we were seniors in college, it was 2013, and self-publishing had just started really taking off in this new way. New adult was a brand new genre, and it was only, you could only get into it via self-publishing. And it kind of felt like, this is our opportunity. We loved young adult, but we always kind of aged up our characters. So we were like, let's age them up to college age. Like, let's write a new adult novel together, a romance novel. All of our books had romance in it. And that was when we were like, okay, this is going to be our breakthrough moment. We're going to stop trying to get the agent. We're going to stop getting rejected. We're just going to do, we're going to bypass it all and just do it ourselves. And that's kind of how Addicted to You happened. We were in college when we wrote it, and it was about college. So it was a lot of our experiences, and we self-published it, and it didn't do that well, but we wanted to make it a series. So we kept writing. And by the third one, a blogger reviewed it, and it just like took off by like one person's review. And at that point, it was successful enough that Krista decided to drop out of, well, she was in pre-med and she like took the MCAT. So she was on the road to becoming a doctor. And she decided to, you know, put all her eggs in the author
basket.
Writing basket. Yeah. At that point, she really took a leap of faith. And that's when that basically was the start of our career.
That's a big leap though, and it worked out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it was super scary at the time, but I think that we just knew we loved writing so much. And it just looked like there was all these other test cases with all these other authors doing really well, just sticking with it. And it was like the more you write, the more you publish, obviously, like the better chance you have at longevity. And
Yeah,
so
the faster.
we kind of just banked on that. Like if we just stick with it and keep going, we'll be able to kind of make something out of it.
It was for sure a hustle. Like we came out of college and it felt like a grind every day. Like we talk about it all the time. Our lives were 24/7 writing. We had no vacations. We missed family events. Like we pumped out some people look back and they're like, the Addicted series came out so quickly. It was because we lived, ate, breathed that series, like those books, because it was our livelihood. Like we felt like if we didn't maintain this, we would lose everything. It was such a hustle. And I don't know if we could do that now, but it took a toll on us mentally and like physically. I remember by Fuel the Fire, I had a fever because I just wasn't sleeping. I was drinking so many Red Bulls. It felt like cramming for a college exam, but like never coming up for air, basically.
I mean, I was in that experience. Like, I was an art major in college, and like before, like our finals, we had to do like exhibits basically. And 4 or 5 in the morning, you would find the art building entirely full of kids, like trying to finish their projects at the last minute. So the last like 2 days before like finals, like nobody slept. So yeah, doing that for like long streams of time, I can imagine the toll that it took emotionally, mentally, physically, all of that.
We're fortunate now that our careers are stable enough to where we don't have to do that. But it definitely felt like at the time when we were that young that we were putting everything that we had, like our whole futures into like this dream.
Yeah, I think that we were really privileged too because we were in our young 20s, we didn't have kids or spouses or any sort of like ties. So it was just definitely felt like a lot more freedom than I think that other like emerging authors have.
So that leads really well into this next question. If there's a piece of advice past author use, because there's both of you, what would it be?
That is a good, I think that I always say be prepared to pivot. I think that when you're an indie author, that was probably the hardest thing for us because when you have some sort of success, you feel like it's forever. And this career really has ups and downs and nothing is exponential. And the market always changes. There's some new thing coming in. There's no such thing as Facebook ads when we first started or sponsored ads. And we were very slow to really see that and pivot when that came about. And that really hurt us. And I think that for any author, even going back to my past self, keep your eyes open, pivot at any moment.
That's
Yeah,
true.
that
It
change.
is an ever-changing market.
Yeah, and change is okay. Like, Krista is a lot better than me at like looking at trends and things like that, whereas I get really emotionally invested in like what we've done and like covers that she's made. And it's like, Becca, it's okay to like, get detached from those and like put your little marketing pants on and try to like separate the creative from the market and try to like merge both of them, I suppose.
Well, and is it hard to find that balance between the creative side and the marketing side? Because I've talked to a lot of authors, and there are some that really thrive in the marketing side. And like, that's like, not that they don't love the creative side of it too, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be an author. But is it hard to find that balance, like to shut the creative and focus on the marketing, like all the time? Or can you kind of blend the two together?
I think it's really hard for us because we have always come into this career through a love of writing, not necessarily a love of selling books. And so we love the creative side more than the marketing side. And the marketing side takes
a lot of creativity too. And sometimes you're just like spent, like your creative wells are dry, and you're like, now I have to figure out how to like have copy on this ad that's also creative that I feel like will hook people. And it's just like a different subsect that some authors are so good at. Like they're just like naturally, like that's their thing. For us, it is a bit more of a struggle. So there is a perfect blend. We're always still trying to find it.
Yeah, like we don't write in all of our books, we don't like think about the tropes and then write the tropes. It's like we write the book and then at the end we're like, wait a minute, what tropes are in this book?
See, but as a
Like,
reader, I appreciate that because there have been so many books that have come out in the past year, year and a half, where like it's so trope heavy and the book itself suffers because they're so focused on the trope. And it's like if you just let the characters do their thing, like it would have been a much more successful story.
yeah, and I think that's where the balance is so hard because those authors have such an easier time marketing their book because like they've got the hooks just like built in. And like for us, like sometimes it's so difficult because like in the Webs We Weave series, we have fake dating, but she's not fake dating her love interest. So like it's like a little trickier.
She's fake dating like the rich heir in town, but which isn't her like boyfriend. So like So
That
like,
Kate Meaner has a book like that where it's fake dating, but she is fake dating a hockey player, but her love interest, I believe he's the GM of the team. And but it
I
was really
love
an
that.
interest, it was such a great book and it was a really interesting take, which actually was one of the things I really enjoyed about this book because you have that trope, but it has like details to it and there's like the sub trope along with it. And I think it's so interesting that you guys made that decision.
Yeah, I think it's just easier. I think that it's like some authors need to write the blurb and like have their tropes before they start writing. And I think that we do better just kind of organically building characters around like a plot. We're very like character focused, so it doesn't really make sense for us to go in with like a bunch of lists of tropes. We more like to list out this character's personalities and motivations, like before we
Yeah,
start
and their
writing.
values and how they tick, things like that.
So for your series, because they're almost saga series, because you have like multiple books and you have like side characters that have relationships that are building, and it's focused on one couple, but at the same time you have all these other things happening. But it's over an arc of multiple books. Do you guys plan those out, or do you pants like for the whole time?
I think it's like a little mixture of both. We have like a very like bare bones outline. Like we always know where we're ending up. Like we know what we're striving towards, the end goal, and then we know like kind of like big beats in the middle. But in terms of just like chapter by chapter, we kind of let those play out organically. And like stuff can always change. Like we're always open to even like the ending shifting if we feel like the direction needs to go somewhere differently.
Yeah, I feel like there's no way we could 100% pants it being together because I think we both would go off the rails. Like, and we would be like, wait a minute, I have an idea for the end that's not yours, and you just took it in a really weird direction.
So for your writing yourself, do you kind of do chapter by chapter? Do you just kind of work like throw in wherever you have an idea? Because I know there are some authors who co-write where they'll have a shared doc and one will write for a little while and then like go off and do something, and then the next one will pick it up right where it ended and kind of just intermix the chapter like writing. And then there are some where one does the hero's point of view and one does the heroine's point of view. How do you two split that?
So we have a shared doc, but it's not like one of us will write and then when we stop, the other one picks up. It's kind of like we're both writing on the document at the exact same time, and one of us is ahead and the other one is behind. So like I always usually start the book first and I'll be like three chapters ahead, and then Becca will come in behind and she fills in and adds more detail, and it really It helps because our strengths and weaknesses are very, very different. Like, I love writing dialogue. I will say to the ends of the earth that I can just write two characters in an empty room talking all day. Like, that's like my favorite thing. And like, that does not make a book. So Becca will come in and she'll be like, these characters need to actually like be somewhere interesting. The conversation's great, but and she'll add in like more detail and stuff to the story.
It is really fun for me because Krista sort of like lays the TV scene or movie or whatever for me, and I get to like sort of think about it on. I'm always like, okay, is there a way to like push this even forward, like deeper? Like, can we take this another level? And I think the best example is for Dishonestly Yours when they show up in this new town. Phoebe and Rocky are both con artists from con artist families, and they pretended to be like everything to each other to con people out of money. And when they show up, she's supposed to start a fresh life. And the first thing that her landlord asks her, he's like, what is Rocky, this guy, to you? Like, he just showed up. Like, what are you to each other? And she just blurts, I make her blurt out, he's my ex-husband. Like, we're divorced. And so I added that in there, and that sort of changed their relationship going forward. Of course, Krista can reject my inserts at any point, but it sort of, yeah, that sort of like changed really like what their
The
relationship was gonna
dynamic of
be
the
like.
story.
And I liked that one. And like when she does change things like that and is like, oh, we could push this a little harder and make it more edgy or like make it more interesting, I will still be like a couple chapters ahead of her writing. And instead of like going backwards and like editing it to make sense, I kind of just in my head go, okay, well, now this is like the thread line. The town or this guy knows that, their ex husband and ex-wife. So I just have to like remember that and like write it as if it has always existed as I keep going ahead.
So does that get kind of confusing though, like as you're editing? Like, 'cause I'm sure that you do multiple read-throughs before you send it to your editor. Does it ever get confusing? Like, which thread are we supposed to be going with?
It doesn't because at the end of the day or like at the beginning of the morning, like whenever we before we start writing, we always switch and reread what each other has written. So like I'm always reading like the actual final draft every day, which it's not the final draft because we do multiple passes, but it's like more obviously final than what I'm writing first. So I read Becca's edits and it is kind of like, okay, that is the new story. It does get confusing if I'm too far ahead. Like if I'm like I've been like 10 chapters ahead and I have to stop and
That's
be like,
hard.
this is just like this is too much.
It's like you're really in the flow, but she's like, we need to go take a hard left here.
And it's like, but I've already like surpassed that 10 chapters ago and it just it's
And then
too
we end up
much.
doing, yeah, we end up doing more work for ourselves. Another flip side is like Krista will be ahead, not too far ahead, but she'll add a character and I'll read her stuff when it's my turn to read her stuff. And I'll be like, Krista, this character is so good. Like, he needs
You
to
need to
stay.
add him
Like,
back into the
yeah, he
other
needs to be
stuff.
a main character. Like, and she was like, he was just supposed to be in this chapter. I'm like, no. You wrote an amazing character. Like, keep going. So it is really fun because we're kind of each other's like editor, like developmental editor, beta reader, whatever, while
It's essentially like a
we're
built-in
writing.
alpha reader, like that person who gets first views of everything. And
And it's fun because we both have different preferences for things. Like we both like different things, but at the end of the day, we're merging what we both like together. So I think that in a way we're like appealing to more different types of readers with one book.
how do you, as writers, like, and it's the two of you, like, how do you balance the development of the romantic relationships that are existing in this story with the other elements of it?
I think that whenever we write, we've always said that the romantic love is just as, or the platonic love and the relationships between like siblings and family is always just as important to us as the romantic love. So usually we have character arcs and relationship arcs with like friends or family members, and we
we tend to balance them just as equally as the romance, wouldn't you say, Becca? Or at least we try to.
Yeah.
That's our attempt.
No, I would say that's accurate. We actually, when we have our outline, we'll have sections with different relationships at the bottom of, we have like a chapter by chapter outline, and we'll fill it in as the chapters are being written. It's not, it's like blank, but like as the chapters are going, it gets constructed. And beneath it all, we'll have like different relationships, and we'll write down their arcs that we like have in mind. Sometimes it organically takes place, but most of the time it's we know it's like important to showcase whatever is going on. And sometimes it's over like the webs we weave, there's relationships between different characters that sort of like have payoffs by the third book, by like the trilogy. So it's like a trilogy arc, not just central to like one book.
Well, and let's talk Webs We Weave. This is Destructively Mine. It's book two, and it is a trilogy. It releases April 29th, 2025. Tropes are basically fate, dating, and some deception, but it's not super tropey, which I appreciate because I really dislike a tropey book. But that's one thing. Like, it's this family of con artists. The kids have kind of branched off. They all have a really strong relationship, but there's also like different subsets of that. Like there's the triplets and Rocky and Haley, who are brother and sister, and then they have their other brother, Trevor. But he's kind of an outlier, but not at the same time. And so it's this tangled web of chaos, like just in the personal relationships.
Yeah, we try to make every single character sort of, if they have scenes together, that they all have different relationships with each other. So Phoebe's brothers have different relationships with her Rocky, with her boyfriend, and you know, she has a different relationship with Rocky's little brother. Like that is a whole different dynamic. So we really do think about what types of relationships are going to come out of like these personalities, and we always like talk about sticking them in an elevator, and if the elevator breaks down, how they're all going to react, and that sort of helps us plan out like, okay, who are these people, and like, are they going to get along with each other? Who's going to like cause chaos and friction and things like that?
Well, and Trevor, like, he's such a dynamic character that you don't really know a lot, like, but you're building up. Like, I feel like his storyline is going to really come to fruition in the next book, and I'm very excited for where it's going, because you get little snippets of like the past, and there's this one chapter in this book that talks about something like after something happens, and I'm being very vague because you have to read this to figure it out, but I'm like, what is going on here? Like, how are you setting this up for the next book?
Yeah, and it in the third book it totally shakes like Phoebe's perception of him too, because it's something that she didn't know about him. So it's like her views of him have now changed, and how is that like changing her feelings towards him? So it's very fun to write. Yeah,
So
I think
one, oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think that we have like favoritism in our writing usually towards like the youngest character in a group. Like for some reason they always become like our faves. I think it stems from TV shows. Like it's like the gossip girl of it all. What is it, Jenny? Like it's like the
Yeah,
little sister character or
no
like
one
the
liked
young
her,
character.
Krista.
I think we were the only people that liked her growing up.
How?
I don't know, Jenny Humphrey. I swear she was not a fan favorite, but me and Krista were
She was
obsessed.
not.
We were me and
Obsessed with
Krista, she was
her.
our favorite character. I think it was, I don't know why. I
You like
literally
the
don't know
black
why.
sheep, because she was kind of the black sheep of the
Maybe that's
family.
what it is. We like the young sibling black sheep. Like that's just like that's our catnip. And I feel like we always like kind of have one of those in our books. So that's Trevor is like the chaotic young black sheep.
So when this book opens up, like this group of con kids essentially like are kind of floundering because they found out some information in book one that it has kind of shaken their entire existence, and they don't know what to do with it. And so that's a lot of like the underlying tension and storyline of this book is like them discovering truths and lies and figuring things out. And It's so intriguing the way that you created this world. Where did you get your inspiration for it?
Well, we've always really liked con artist things. This was actually a concept when I was in high school. I wrote a book called The Reign of Spiders, saved it on a floppy disk because back then we were saving everything on floppy disks.
Yes.
And I still have it. And
But
I
no way to
remember
actually get to
yeah.
it.
No, I still have the laptop that has the floppy disk insert, so I think I could manage to
Hopefully it
pull that
still
up. I
up.
don't know. But yeah, we had that concept, and Krista really liked that book back in the day. It was one of the ones that we tried to get an agent with, and that didn't pan out. So we were like, okay, let's take this concept and redo it. Like, we literally just took the concept of the fact that there's two con artist families, and so it kind of it was like a childhood idea. And I don't know, have you ever seen the show The Riches? Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I haven't seen it. I actually was
Yeah.
thinking of the show White Collar.
Yeah, we did watch White Collar back in the day and Leverage. But I think that The Riches we really loved. We used to watch that with our family, and it was about a family of grifters. And I think it only lasted like 2 seasons. But that's probably where initially the idea came from back in the day when we were writing it. But yeah, we always like loved the idea of these two families. We love family sagas. So just incorporating something where all of these people are super tight-knit and they really only trust each other, and they've done these crimes together and sort of are in hot water together. It's just super interesting to us. And it being still set in a contemporary world, and we don't have to like build a fantasy, well, build like a fantasy world with like supernatural creatures or anything.
Well, I mean, that's the upside to the contemporary world, but sometimes those fantasy worlds that authors create are incredible.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Krista and I were talking about this today. They take so much time. We wish we had time to do more detailed world building, but it feels like this is like a lot easier to do as far as world building goes.
So this book, this series, like it really focuses on Rocky and Phoebe's relationship and their change from like they've grown up together, their change from just being friends and co-con artists to like having like this full-fledged relationship. And then we like see all these outlier like relationships grow and change as well, which that Cliffy, let me tell you, I am excited about that. But so during this book though, Phoebe is fake dating Jake, who is a like wealthy mark, but she doesn't really want him to be a mark. She just needed to like create this new life for her. But then we find out there's like intricate like connections between the godmothers and the godfather with the town that they're in. And it's just, how can you keep everything straight and not confuse everybody? Because I was not confused like as I was reading this book, but I'm like, I could see how as an author it's hard to keep everything in line.
Yeah, that was a, we have extensive note planning, and I think it also helps that there are two of us. And so like when we I feel like I don't know how I mean it's good to know that you weren't confused.
No, I wasn't, but I was like, this, like, when we find out about the twit or the triplets, like their big reveal, I was like, but you thought it was somebody else's connection, which I just thought that like some of the twists that you had were so detailed and intricate, and I did not expect them, which I'm a big suspense reader, so I love a good twist. But yeah, I just thought that the way that you created the twists and the connections, and it was just, I did not want to put this down. And I really
Yeah.
need book three, like right now.
Oh,
Yeah, a lot of them were planned out from the beginning. So we leave Easter eggs throughout all of the books. Like if you go back and read the first one, a lot more might make sense because Rocky will reference things that happened in the bu first book. In the second one, like when he shows up in Connecticut, he will say, "I don't think we've ever pulled a con here." In the beginning of Dishonestly Yours, and it's sort of like an offhanded remark. And it later proves in the second book important that the fact that he feels like they've never pulled a con there. And the way that he feels like his first interaction with Jake was throwing some red flags, but like he wasn't sure why, like that definitely comes to play later on. So yeah, we love like sort of like setting little Easter eggs here and there. And like Krista said, we have our notes are kind of intense, like as we talk to each other and go on, because we constantly, when we're writing the books, we're constantly talking to each other to make sure that we know what we're doing and that we're on the same page. We're constantly trying to be on the same page. It's why we also have Pinterest boards with like fan casts and stuff, because we also want to imagine the characters as the same person. So we don't have like, I'm not picturing like this blonde sort of like Alexander Skarsgård looking guy, and Chris is over here picturing someone who is like completely opposite
Like Paul
as
Rudd.
the yeah, like that would just be bad. That would be really bad.
Like the height discrepancy, the
Yeah.
blonde. Well, that it's just I had never read you guys before. This was the first time, and they reached out to the podcast and it was like, you've been on my radar for a long time, but sagas, like sometimes like it's hard for me because if sometimes I'm not in the mood for a binge, and like a saga series, the way you
Oh,
guys
yeah.
create them, like it's a binge because I hate a cliffy also. And so it was one of those things where I dove into this book. I hadn't read book one, but I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, it's fine. And I honestly, going into book two the way I did not miss book one. Like, there's definitely some little like nuances that like I feel like I would have gotten better understanding with, but I really enjoyed the banter that you create and the way that these characters interact and the speed in which the story flows, but it's not fast at the same time. Like it has that balance of connection and intrigue, but it almost is like watching a movie like as you're reading, because the way that it flows, like there's enough dialogue with the setup, and just there's just something constantly happening throughout the book.
Yeah, we're huge TV junkies, and we always said when we were younger, we wanted to be like the Coen brothers. We were like, we want to be the Ritchie sisters. We were like, we want to be the Russo brothers or whatever. We're the sisters, and so we really wanted to like work in television, but that didn't happen. We had a lot of just lofty dreams as children, and
I feel like that's a normal thing, though.
yeah. And when we wrote this, we were like, okay, this is our TV series, and it's like on air next to the Vampire Diaries. It's coming on at like 8 o'clock. And we just really loved this idea that it was super cinematic and it was like our version of us producing a TV series together.
Yeah, I think how we write is definitely a lot like TV. Like whenever we set a scene, we kind of are like, this is like the set that we have. Our characters are in this set, and we kind of like place them in like an event space, or like we don't typically do a lot of montages or like things where like time flows to where it's not visual. Like our things are definitely like s set pieces almost in our writing.
Yeah, and we took a lot. I mean, I think we have taken a lot of inspiration of how television is constructed. When I was in college, The Vampire Diaries was airing, and I would always look at it and being like, they ha always have these one get-togethers, like these parties, or events, and most episodes are structured around those events. So when we were writing books, we were like, okay, there always has to be some sort of like event or some sort of thing being held to where we can get all the characters together and drama can just it can
Like
go
it's a
down.
catalyst for the chaos.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I think you do a great job with the blend of the background with the foreground, and your characters are so different, but there's such similarities throughout them as well that like you can feel that connection. And like Haley, like her storyline in this book, which I'm really hoping I get more of her in the next book, because she just is so overtly focused in the way that she has to get her answers. And I think she's just, I mean, she's a character that I just really enjoyed reading. And like when we get some of her background and some of her truths that like come out, that people are like, oh, yeah, I knew that. And other people are like, oh, I was not expecting that. But then we get that big kaboom at the end. There's just so much that like you've set so much up that I'm really excited to see like where all the lines and the threads end up.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
her.
like, oh, you
Go
go,
ahead.
Krista. Oh, I was gonna say, I'm like so excited for book three because it really, like, we are constructing this as a very, like, cohesive trilogy. So it should be a very, like, satisfying conclusion. Yeah, I was gonna tease, can I tease it, Krista? Oh, yeah. So her POV is actually in book three,
Oh, is it?
which is so much fun because her voice is just so different than Phoebe and Rocky's. Where Phoebe and Rocky will tell you that they are like very similar. They're both super hot-headed. They're like feisty, but she's so different, and I love having a new POV give you more information about characters that you haven't otherwise. And she'll tell you things that Phoebe and Rocky haven't told you about, like, everyone, which is just so much fun. Yeah, and she's very introspective in like a different way than they are.
And that's the thing, like you have these two characters of Rocky and Phoebe, and they have a lot of similarities, but they're very, very different at the same time. Like they're both reactive, but reactive in different ways also, which I think is very interesting that you created these parallels, but at the same rate, they're very different people. I mean, granted, they're boy girl characters, but you can have very similar people. Like it doesn't matter
Yeah.
their sex, but like they're so similar but so different at the same time, and they work really well together.
Yeah, she's like the ultimate team player, willing to go down for the team, and he's a little bit more stubborn and like wants to like have control.
He's a
Yeah.
very jealous guy too.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I like, but so is book three what's next, or do you have something else in the works prior to book three?
For this series, book three is going to come out next year. And then our next book, actually, after Destructively Mind, comes out in September. And it's the start of another series. It's called Burn Bright. So it's the first book in a new series.
Now, is that going to be standalones or is that going to be saga as well?
It's a 6-book series, but each book follows different relationships,
So it's like
romances.
interconnected with different
Yeah.
couples.
Yeah.
That sounds, I do love a series like that where there's an overarching storyline that like comes to a head at the end. That culmination, like the build up, and yeah, I really enjoy those. Well,
Yeah,
thank
this
you
is.
so much. No, go
Thank
ahead, say what
you.
you're gonna
Oh,
say.
no, I'm good. We're good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and chatting all the things Destructively Mine. It was really great. I have not had a conversation with twin writers before, so it was a fun thing for me.
It was so fun chatting with you as well. Yes.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.